All right, all you cool cats and kittens, welcome back to the Daily Journey Podcast. I'm Scott Pontier, your host of this podcast, and I love to bring on friends and have conversations. So if you are interested in listening to how people are processing life on a daily basis in the middle of our global pandemic, then maybe this podcast is for you, and you might want to listen to more. So you can go online at our website, jamestownharborchurch.org, in the sermon section, and look for Daily Journey. You can also open us up on any podcast app, Overcast, iTunes, whatever it is, and find Jamestown Harbor Church there and just subscribe to get these in your feed every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and join in on the conversation a little bit. I am excited today. It's Jeremy Cruz Day on the podcast, and Jeremy is a guy who I've known for a number of years. He's a pastor. He is an associate pastor role in charge of care and discipleship over at Fair Haven Church. And Jeremy and I sit in some meetings every week together. We sit on a preaching team meeting together every week. And Jeremy, I like talking to Jeremy because he's like an opposite person of me. He thinks about things differently. He engages the world differently. And we have a nice little conversation about that today. And I'm excited for you guys to hear it. So let's jump right into my conversation with Jeremy Cruz.
I found some of what's shifted in me is early on, I found that I went into like super productive mode. Once the world shut down, and I think it was kind of in response to what this season was doing inside of me, and instead of actually naming and identifying what it was happening in me, I tried to fix that for everybody else.
Everybody else. Oh, interesting.
Right. Without actually like doing the internal work of recognizing, oh, there's something going on in me that's painful right now, right?
Was there something that made you realize you weren't doing that work and you needed to?
Yes. And I'll get there. So, immediately what I did, my life, like I'm an extrovert. I'm a seven. I just want to do all the things with all the people. Right.
Sure.
And when this first hit, everything stopped. My weekends, like my calendar got wiped clean.
Yeah.
And I recognized for me, this kind of created more inconvenience than anything else. Right. Like I missed doing the normal things that I was going to be doing.
Yeah.
And I knew for a lot of other people, it's a lot more difficult because there's a lot of people who aren't able to quarantine right now with an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and a family in a house. And so I want to try to create spaces to bring people together in the midst of, early on, I started wondering if we were using all this language of social distancing.
Yeah.
And to me, like, I understood why we were using social distance, but it felt like we were in a space where we needed physical distance. Because that
but
would
not
keep
social
us safe,
distance.
But not social distance, right? Yeah. Like it felt like we were in a spot where we needed physical distance, but it's the maintaining and creating of social connection that feels like it's the one of the things to me that's going to help carry us through the physical distance.
You know,
right?
What's interesting is I was reading an executive order from a different state, like South Dakota or something like that. And they used physical distancing as their language.
Oh, they did they really? Oh, they must've heard me.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if that was on purpose or what, but yeah.
Right. No, so I started trying to create spaces where people could socially connect through Zoom, through some Facebook Live stuff, through just kind of bringing a different level of digital community together. And where I realized I wasn't doing the work within myself, it would have been the second or third weekend into this.
Sure.
And there was a moment where it was on a weekend. I was still trying to create some things. I was trying to do things. And one of my kids, so my son, he asked me on a weekend, like, "Hey dad, do you want to go outside and play catch?"
Mm-hmm.
And my response to him was, "Oh man, I would love to. I just don't have the time. I just can't."
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it made me realize like, It's a weekend during a global pandemic.
Why don't I have space for this?
Stay at home order. And I just told my kid, I would love to. I just don't have time. And I realized in that moment, I was trying to create all of these connections for people out there in kind of the digital world.
Yeah, for everybody else. But
and I was actually missing some of the connections that were actually in my own home because of that. And it made me really kind of step back and go, okay, what am I trying to do? And what's the purpose behind it? And why am I going into this mode? And it made me realize, oh, I am really missing.
I'm a bad dad. That's what it made me realize.
Yes, totally. Like our calendar is usually pretty filled with like, we're going to see a bunch of people just on a regular basis where our regular kind of rhythm is highly social.
Okay.
And so, I just realized in me that I really missed that. Mm. And then I think partly I just assumed that everybody else was too. And I wanted to try to be that answer for as many people as I could to try to create social connection in that space of physical distance.
Yeah. It's funny how, man, I mean, we're all experiencing the same thing, but none of us are experiencing it the same way.
And sure.
So we have a hard time really. I have a hard time. I don't know if we do. I have a hard time assuming what other people are experiencing. That's always true for me though.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, I tend to be the kind of person that's like, I really want to call them to see how they're doing, but, that would probably be really annoying to them. And I'm assuming I'm interrupting something. And pandemic has given me the excuse to go, I bet that's not true. You know? But I just assume that for most people, but, that's my own stuff, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So have you ever done any of the Clifton Strength Finders kind of stuff?
Mm-mm.
Okay. It's, man, Clifton Strength Finder.
I know of it, but I've never done it, you know?
Sure. Yeah. It was something we did in seminary. It kind of identifies like your top five strengths, right? The things to pour into. And the whole idea is find what you're gifted in, find those things that God has kind of developed in you or given you, and then kind of pour yourself into those things.
Yeah. Don't work on your weaknesses. Work at like leverage strengths kind of idea. All right.
Yeah. The whole idea is, exactly. Yes. That instead of spending all your time trying to make your weaknesses less weak, actually rely on other people who are strong where you're weak and pour into the things that make you uniquely you. Right. And I know one of the things I am is I'm an includer. And so I want to do things and I just want to bring people along. And so for me, it was just, come on, I'm going to do this thing. Come with me. Right. And
do you find that you said they taught you, you kind of went through that in seminary. And so like in terms of career path, the idea therefore is you're going to, the more you focus on your strengths and leveraging your strengths, you're going to end up in your career roles. Like those are going to be the best kind of fits for you. Have you found this to be actually true? Because part of the thing, let me reflect my thing first and then.
Absolutely. Yes. You.
Because part of the thing, I feel like I'm in that kind of thing now, right? Like in my leadership role at Jamestown in particular, I'm able to go, here are the things I'm really good at. And there are people on my staff and volunteer who do things that I don't do well and they do them really, really well. And I'm
sure,
please go ahead and do that. You know, it's like, Abby, Ben, Eric, like Missy, Gina, everybody on my team, they're all like, they bring something to the table that I think really, really matters. And I'm not worried that I have to be that guy.
Sure, but I don't, totally.
My working hypothesis is like, prior to this, ministry does not afford you a lot of those kinds of opportunities.
Right.
It instead asks a lot more of you being all things to all people. And you're the kind of guy that I think is really strong in the places he's really strong at. And so I just wonder how that's like, how that's felt for you. Have you found that to be true? Have you found yourself struggling with the places you're weak at in ministry because of that?
I would say both. I would say right now in where I'm at right now, I'm really able to lean into what I think I do well because I have a team who are also really strong in the places where I'm not. Yeah, I would echo the whole idea that I don't have a lot of kind of like middle of the bar, like middle of the line graphs, like where I'm just kind of like kind of this thing. Like I'm either full on or I'm not, right?
Like, I'm either that's really good at that stuff or I'm really terrible at it.
Right. Like, yeah. I'm, oh yeah. I mean, we talked about the Enneagram. Like, I am kind of the, like the classic seven, right? Like, in this, it was a lot of, the five strengths that it identified for me are, they were things that I do think I'm strong at and stuff that I'm able to give myself to. It's the stuff that I find most life-giving for me when I'm able to do it. And right now, I have, so somebody on my team, Margaret, is able to do a lot of kind of the administrative, the nail down the details of, I'll sit up here, like I'll sit kind of at the 30,000 feet and I'll dream about all the things.
Sure,
Putting the actual like details. It's why it's helpful being in rooms when you're in them, because you will often kind of drive down to the details and the systems.
Sure.
I don't necessarily do that as well. And so right now I'm surrounded by a lot of people who do that work well.
Yeah. Where, and so you don't feel anxious, like I got to figure that out too.
Nope. Right?
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. I'll try to ideate and dream and do all of this stuff. And then the question of like, okay, so what should we do first? It's like,
I don't know.
That's a great question that should have been on my radar, right? Mm-hmm.
Has that always been true? Have you been able to move through ministry that way pretty much by just being like focused on the strengths side of things?
Not totally. I mean, the church that I was at prior to coming to Harbor Churches, to Fairhaven, was a church where I was doing kind of more of all of the things. And so I definitely had to schedule in my calendar the time to do the things that I don't find as life-giving, the things that don't necessarily come as natural to me, because partly like being an Enneagram 7, like I want to run away from the things that I don't find life-giving into the things that I do. Yeah. And so I knew that I had to actually kind of force some of those blocks in my calendar to make sure before I take lunch on Thursday, these tasks need to be done, right?
And so you say that as if you were successful at that.
It depended on the week and the number of things that I had to get done before lunch on Thursday, right?
I say that because I just know, like, of course, I've got to have a strategy to deal with the things I don't want to deal with, right? But I'm wildly unsuccessful at that, you know? And I've gotten like penalized for that in ministry context.
Sure.
In the past, you know, and that's why I love what I do now, because I don't feel like I do. Like there's the freedom to be who you are. And I feel like ministry has always been being a person who works in ministry. I don't know any other field. I don't work in any other field, but like it highlights both the thing you uniquely bring to the table and the thing you uniquely lack at the table.
Huh. Like
it highlights both of those things really, really well.
It's this great revealer.
And the more like team context you're in, I think if you're a solo pastor and you're the only person on your team, I think that's different. And I think there's some danger in that too, like that we need people around us to reflect, you know, like a mirror. But in team context, it's like, I feel like you're always recognized for like, oh, you're really this kind of person, you're good at this.
Sure.
And
totally.
Also you really stink at this. And and that can be a gift and a curse in many ways.
Yeah, totally.
But as a guy who's a includer and like wants to bring the party, you probably don't notice the other side of it as much. somebody once told me about people who say they are Enneagram 7 that while most of the world will hear 100 comments of praise and one of criticism and will only remember the criticism, that you will tend to work the opposite way. I'll hear 100 comments of criticism and one of praise, and that's the thing I'm living on.
Oh, no kidding.
Is that true for you?
Oh, not at all. No, not at all. No, I would say, I would say if I'm hearing 100 comments and one of them is critique, I'll stew on that thing for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I know.
Good to know you're mortal then, I guess.
Yeah.
You're human.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I've had to learn, because like so much of what we do is kind of in these public spaces where we get a lot of feedback, and some of the feedback, like we're in kind of one of those things where it feels like everybody that walks through the doors of whatever we do thinks they know how to, sometimes knows how to do it better than us. Right. And sometimes they're absolutely right. And there's just a lot of opinions about how we can do everything that we do. And I learned early on that
And the thing you do is public like that, right? It's not different than being like a lawmaker or a governor. Like we all want to backseat drive that thing, right? Like we have an opinion on the person who's doing their job publicly, right?
100%. Yep. Yeah. I've had to learn that, like, I've had to learn to kind of hold a lot of things outside of myself, where if you're going to critique this thing, I'm still okay.
It's not about me, it's about the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause early on, like who I was. Yeah.
I had somebody like once, like say something to me about like that adage of like, oh, the pastor, you know, the preacher, he works 1 hour a week. Right.
Yeah,
you know? And his response was, well, imagine the most stressful part of your job, the most stressful hour of your job every week. And you had to do it on a stage in front of a bunch of people who are going to like critique you about it. And you had to do that every single week, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Knowing one of the things people are going to ask when they get in their car is, did you like it? Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, man.
I tend to not even think about that anymore. Like, thankfully.
Sure. Yeah. I try to think through like on a Sunday, like what do I want people to say when they get in their car? Right. And if I can give them something more than just,
if there's one thing that you want people to say, I know what mine is. I would love to know what yours is. Like, if people come to a worship experience at a church, they can't do right now, right? Like, and then they get in their car and then they leave. Like, what's the thing that you hope they walk away as a general rule? What are you trying to do?
Yeah. My hope. I believe that the gospel is transformational. I know that Jesus has changed my life. Right. And so my hope is it's less, did I like it? Did it check like the boxes of what I prefer? Or my hope is you walk away asking, okay, what does this mean for tomorrow? Hmm. Right. Because something got revealed in me. Yeah. I saw something that I didn't see before. I came to understand something that maybe changes the way I treat that person that sits in the cubicle next to me tomorrow.
Sure. Right.
Or my interaction with the neighbor who's doing like,
my how I think about myself and like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good one.
And so it's my hope. You walk into the, like you get to your car and go, okay, now what do I have? Like, what does this mean for me tomorrow? Like for the way that I live my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
good one. That's a good one.
That's my hope. What would you say?
I think I tend to be, I hope somebody gets in the car and says, those are people I want to hang around with again.
Oh, sure. Totally. Right? Yes.
Yeah. So I think less about the thing that I'm doing and more like the whole of the thing.
Yeah.
And say, those are people I want to hang around with again. And if my part was passable and like there are a couple of things that I remember, like that was fine. But the whole of it were, and you know, that some of it is like, people walk into a church for the first time and are going, do I like that pastor on the stage? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
And mostly that's framed with, do I like the thing he said?
Or sure. She said, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Which for me is, but out of the whole of it, I'm going like, did they meet people in a lobby? Did they meet people mm-hmm. that they sat right. next to? Did somebody have a conversation with them? And cause when I was on sabbatical a few years ago, we went to a number of different churches. And I tried to put the lens or the hat on that was, what if I was looking for a church?
Totally. Right?
I've never had to do that before. I've worked in.
Oh, sure enough. Right? Yeah.
And what if if I'm looking for a church, I'm usually interviewing for a church or something. But if I'm a person with a family that's going, and then the question that would come out of that is, out of this experience, how could I make these people my people? And how would that happen? How would these people become my people? And what I found is that's a really tough question because
totally.
I don't understand the language you're using. Like when you name your, you know, when you name your programs Spark or Blaze or, you know, whatever it is, I don't know if that's for me, for my kids, mm-hmm. for my grandparents. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you find yourself running around looking for definitions, right?
More than anything, did the people I interacted with seem like they might have room for me in their social circle?
Gotcha. Totally.
And when nobody talks to you, it makes you feel like they don't have room for me. When people talk to you and ask you questions and engage with you beyond just a hello, good morning, suddenly it's like, oh, I bet these people have room for me in their life. And I could see how they could become my people. And I think that's my question. Like, are these people that could be my people?
Sure. Yeah, totally. Yeah. We actually, I'm really thankful that I'm kind of between. So my career started, I went down a number of different paths until I actually found where I am mm-hmm. now, where I think I should be. Yeah, I first thought I was going to be an engineer. And so I did a year and a half of at Grand Valley for an engineer.
Yeah.
Ended up doing youth ministry, so I had a gap between kind of college and jumping into seminary. Seminary wasn't just my next thing. Like church
work. You were
work,
not planning on doing that.
No, not yeah. a chance.
Yeah.
And I actually had a little bit of time where I'd worked in the church and then I'd stopped working in a church for a handful of years. And so when my wife and I, when we were kind of getting engaged, when we were getting married, when we were starting a family, mm-hmm. I was not in that season working for a church. Mm-hmm. And so we actually kind of were in that space of trying to find a community we could call ours.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's right. It's been really, really helpful for me, even though it was only just a couple few years there. Mm-hmm. They were really kind of formational moments in my family's life. We're trying to figure out, where are we going to raise our kids at, right?
And, yeah, yeah. And it's those kinds of questions. Where are the people I'm going to raise my kids with? How do I find my way into that? How do these people become my people? All that kind
right.
of stuff.
And for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a for weird sure. thing as a pastor to be like, if I wasn't a pastor, would I go to a church?
Yeah, right.
Would I go sure. to this church? You know, like uh-huh. I feel like I'm in a season where I totally would because
yeah,
sure. these are my people. And I can't imagine them not being my people, but
yep. you know,
that's always a hard thing. So
yeah. And I'm recognizing the gift that I have in that. Cause I would echo the same and mm-hmm. yeah, the gift that is to be
gift.
In a community
yeah.
of people that like you look around and go, yeah, this is my community, right? Like these mm-hmm. are my people. I love these people. Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge gift.
Yeah. Well, hey man, let's get to your questions. What do you got for question number one? I'm curious what Jeremy's brain thinks of.
So like, first off, these questions, like, oh, this was a riot. I started wondering, asking myself, okay, I know you've had a number of these before. Mm-hmm. And so I know a lot of questions have been asked. And so I have gone through a bunch of the podcasts. I can't say that I've listened to all of them. And so permission granted that if I ask something that you've already been asked, what I found is starting with the whole, like, okay, what am I going to ask turned into, shoot, now I have to pick which one I'm going to, right? Like, I've got a list of stuff.
Right, you got a list of stuff. That's usually the way it goes with folks, is they're like, I actually have a few, so.
I get to tap the mind of Scott Pontier. Are you kidding
oh,
me?
No.
Like, I live
That's
for
the direction
things.
You took with this. Oh, boy.
No, I, so.
It's dangerous for everybody.
I started wondering, so I want to ask a question of you that I've been asking of myself in kind of this space, because.
Yeah.
So it feels like as I watch my social media, as there are a couple big events that feels like have happened kind of in the middle of our weeks. It's we get an extended stay at home order. We get a restricted stay at home order. We get and all of this happens. And it feels like so much of the world around me is just responding to the external stimuli, right? Like,
okay, sure. Yeah.
Everybody's kind of waiting, like everybody's on the edge of their chair waiting, like what is the governor going to say on Wednesday? What is she going to say on Wednesday? And she says it, and then Facebook just blows up one way or the other, right? Like super in support, super on the other. And like, and so it feels like in a world where it feels like we respond and we react to the external stimuli of what happens around us.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it.
How is it? And if somebody's asked this already, we'll move on. But are there practices that I find myself having some of these conversations around, like, are there practices that you have been doing that you've maybe taken on in the midst of this that help you stay grounded in a space when it feels like so much on the outside? Who saw us here 7 weeks ago, right? Like everything outside has changed.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we find ourselves like, how do you keep from getting blown all over the place every yeah. time something new happens?
Yeah.
What are some of the practices you feel keep you grounded in the midst of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Somebody may have asked it before, but the way you ask it is different, so the answer gets different. So I'm not worried about people ever asking the same one again, because
sure.
it's going to get framed differently, and so I'm going to answer it however you framed it.
Yeah,
because a really good question.
Yeah.
Because you're asking about, like the thing that popped in my head while you were talking was, I try really hard to respond to internal stimuli and not external stimuli, right? Like that's tends to be true of me. And I get really stressed out when I'm finding myself responding to external stimuli. So like,
sure.
I get the difference of what you're talking about. I think I'm a better person when I'm responding to the internal stimuli, right? When I'm responding to what I know God has been doing inside of me, what I know is true, right? What my emotional like connection to a person is. Like, if I'm responding to those things, I'm making better, you know, better decisions and things like that. So I get really stressed out when I have to respond to external stimuli. So
sure. Okay.
In this kind of thing, I watch you and I respond very differently to the first 3 weeks of this experience, for example.
Sure enough.
Because you told a story about how, man, like my kid wants to play baseball with me in the front yard and I'm too busy trying to like help everybody else connect and do all that kind of stuff. So you will lean right into like this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I will lean back a little bit.
Oh, no kidding.
Right? Because I will feel overwhelmed by the external stimuli. And I'll go, I have to find a way to be centered in this and then respond.
So
it takes me a little bit longer. I'm a little bit slower. I a little bit will tend to say no to that external stimuli, no to that one, no to that one, until I can see a little clearly, right?
Sure, sure.
So for better and for worse.
Yeah.
There are times when I think that's probably really helpful to other people. There are times where I think it's probably super annoying to other people.
So what about the like devotional type practices, some sort of like internal work that you do?
I'm going to answer this question differently than the way I think you want me to answer.
Yeah, that's okay. Go for it.
Because if the question is, how do I keep from my responsiveness being to the external and drive it more towards responding to the internal?
Sure.
The little soapbox I'll stand here is, well, remove the external stimuli.
Sure.
Why do you have social media accounts then?
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
And, I didn't give up Facebook for Lent. I gave it up for good. And I don't have a Facebook account. And the reason I don't have it, and it's really funny because like, there are people who be like, that's the dumbest thing in the world. Like, why would, especially right now. Right. And I'm like, listen, I know everything I need to know because you all will tell me. Like people, like I'm still connected socially to people. I'm not missing
for
that.
For sure.
Right?
For sure.
But what I found is that thing did a thing to me inside. Right?
No kidding.
It made me feel things. It made me curious about things that don't matter. And I find myself investing my time and just scrolling through. Right. It made me voyeuristic in terms of, ooh, what's going on in their life? And I hated that. It made me wonder how people were going to respond to me if I posted something. It made me realize the only reason I'm posting this was to get a response from you. And I'm like, you really don't need to see a picture of my stinking cute kid. Right. Like, and I know he's cute, but like the reason I'm putting it on there is so you know he's cute and you tell me that. And I'm like, what I found is over time that does stuff to me inside that I don't think is good.
Almost like you're fishing for affirmation, right?
Like, yeah, there's definitely like, if not fishing, wondering, looking, trolling a little bit, you know?
Sure,
like, and so I've found that like that is problematic. I'm sure there's people who can engage in it and it's not problematic for them. I honestly think it's a lot less people than we might give ourselves credit for. But if I want...
Yep.
But at the end of the day, if I want to be grounded, was the word you used.
Yeah, sure.
Then I need to pay attention to what the external stimulus is in my life that ungrounds me. Hmm. And social media is one of those things for me and maybe for a lot more people. And there's no reason like...
That's good.
There's not really a redeemable reason for me to like be on it. And I found myself to be able to be a lot more grounded when I'm not inundated with all this external stuff, right?
Sure, totally.
I have plenty of other things that are external that like invade my life, and so I'm not like on holy ground here, but like that's one practice that has allowed me to say that stuff doesn't need to take a place in my heart, in my soul, in my brain.
Sure.
And when it's not there, that's better for me. So, you know, if you want a practice of being more grounded, think about what the external stimuli is in your life and say, maybe that doesn't need to be there.
I love it. Yeah. Absolutely. I love it.
It's yeah. tough sometimes as like a pastor at a church, and we have social media accounts that we connect with people on, but there are people on my team who like run those things. And if there's something that happens sure. or they will tell me, I will know, you know, as soon as anybody else will know.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'll check the public side of that every now and then, like, did that thing go up on our Facebook page and, right. and that sort of stuff. But it's been a discipline for me in this. I did want to like re-engage it. Although at this point, like it's deactivated. I would have to rebuild all my friend list, you know?
Oh, sure. Care. Oh yeah. You didn't just go dark. Like you straight deleted.
Right. Like
nice. That was, well that was done.
What I needed. So it's like, now I don't even, man, the work it would take to do that doesn't make any sense. I still have an Instagram account, but I feel like that's different.
Sure.
Okay. There's less complaining, you know?
Yep. Agreed. Agreed.
So who
agreed.
Is the, somebody told me, I think it was Eric, our worship director. He said, he heard somebody say, how can I ask God to provide peace and trust and faith in a time where I feel uncertain? And still feed myself a diet of fear and anxiety,
huh.
right? By what I'm ingesting through what I'm totally. Scrolling through, right?
That's good.
And I'll see that on Twitter and I'll see that on Instagram, but not in the same way as Facebook. For me, Facebook
yeah, was I agree.
That I was like, that's a practice. I need to practice not doing Facebook. And deleting it off my phone wasn't enough. So I like deleted sure. it out of my life for better totally. Or for worse. Yeah.
So how long ago did you do that?
I don't know. It might have been 2 or 3 months ago at this point. It okay. was maybe okay. yeah, it was at least 3 months ago.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, earlier at the beginning of 2020, I think.
I love it.
Hey, some good people for you. Are smarter that's fantastic. Than me and can handle it in a different way. For me, no, it was that external thing that unseated my internal grounding. And yeah. So, I mean, and yeah. create space. I mean, I'll give you the whole healthy series we just did
yeah.
at the beginning of the year. And
true.
So those things grounded me, right? Silence and solitude, prayer, sure. like all those kind of things matter, but this is a less spiritual practice, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's actually, that's really good though. It's really good. Yeah. Cause I know for me, like, so yeah, to jump back to for, you know, those listeners that might not have listened to the healthy series, you should press pause and go back to the healthy series we did. Seriously. It was fantastic. And a lot of the things that we talked about have kind of taken root in me in different ways during the season. Cause it felt like when we talked about that, we were trying to convince people to stop being so busy to create sure. the yeah. space.
Yeah. yeah.
And
yeah.
now like, now it feels like that space has been created in our lives. Now, what are we going to do with it?
Right.
Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's interesting to me how, yeah, the practices that worked for us before that carry us into this space, for me, it was kind of really re-engaging a practice. It was starting something new in the midst of it because
yeah.
I'll try to do the things, right? Like I like to do everything. And so I'm
one now of the you can't that, do anything, right?
And now I can't do anything. And so yeah. what I found is in that kind of devotion, like in that trying to ground myself space, like I started asking like, okay, what can I do? Right. Like, cause I can still do something. I can't control so much, but I can control this.
Yeah.
And so,
it was like a question of control, like, okay, what can I control and how do I go control it? Right.
Yeah. And so I just know for me, it's been a practice. One of the practices I've been taking on is I've just been really cozying up with the idea of silence, of not doing anything and recognizing yeah. that identity is elsewhere. And yeah, to actually engage the, you know, the silence and the, I'm not going to read the thing. I'm going to spend time just being quiet and silent yeah. with me and recognize I'm present in this moment and God's present in this moment. And
do you yeah. find like, I think you use the word identity and like,
yeah.
identity gets wrapped around some of these things. Do you find your identity piece is in the doing of a thing or in the response people give you for the doing of the thing?
Oh man, that's a great question.
I mean, it's probably a little of both, but I'm just yeah. curious. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say it's a little of both, but I think I would say I identify as kind of a lot of my identity is in the things that I'm able to create and the spaces I'm okay, able to, yeah. to create and the things I'm able to do. And yeah. 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 So I would say I lean first, but I would say it's definitely some of both.
So everybody could say, I hate you, but you can still get things done. And you'd be like, I'm okay.
Maybe I'll pull back on that much.
That's extreme. I understand. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
I think I tend to be able to do less if I feel affirmed in who I am, you know?
Sure. Okay.
If Jeremy says, man, you're doing a great job, I'll be like, great. I don't have to do anything else today.
Yeah. I am done. I'm checking out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it.
But yeah, that's a good first question. What's your second one?
So my second question, this one is kind of developing in my head even as we're talking, because it's one of the things that came to me last night is one of the things I've been trying to pay attention to is what is this season revealing in us, right? Like it feels like there's a lot of things that were true that we weren't really forced to face until all of the things happened in the last 6 weeks. The fact that we're this network that are actually really, really connected to one another. Like there's just a lot of stuff that feels like it's being revealed.
And yeah. Like it's revealed how connected we actually are to each other. And
totally.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's, and so my question around one of the things that I'm wondering if this is revealing is how can people and how do people change? And let me give a little bit of kind of, let me give a little bit on that. Because it feels like I would have said, yes, I know that my life is different than it used to be, that like I have changed. And I know that change is often something that's hard and it often happens slow. And I would have told myself that like, if I want to help people move from point A to point B, I don't just rush to point B. Like you first have to go to like point A, point one, and then A, point two. Sure. And slow. But then I look at the last 6 weeks and the rate of change that has happened in my life, in the world around me, is really, really high, right? Like 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, was I thinking I'm going to walk into a grocery store wearing a mask?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you remember when we made the decision about 7 weeks ago to actually not hold that first Sunday when we decided not to hold service?
Yeah.
The idea then that like the next week, like the NCAA followed suit and they canceled March Madness. And if you would have told me in January, we would not have an NCAA tournament, the NBA season would be shut down. I would wear a mask in a grocery store.
Yeah. Like I would have on a dime even, right? Like within the course of a few weeks.
Totally.
And so it seems like you answered your own question. Yeah. Of course change can happen, right? Because it just did, but, right?
Yes. But I feel like my question though is, how is it that change happens so fast? How is it that people do? Because it does feel, did I answer my own question? I don't think I,
well,
I think
but I've got don't you think, in. Don't you think that, I guess I'm curious what you mean by change, because change in activity and outward change is a different thing than internal and identity change, right? Because, okay, overnight we can cancel an NBA tournament, you know, like we can cancel a church service, right? Does that mean and that's a change, right? But is that a lasting change? Is that change in identity? I mean, if we're going back to church on Sunday and okay, we took 6 weeks and didn't, and now we did, you know, three weeks later, everything is going to be back the same way it was.
Sure. Yeah, totally. I guess for me, I look at people that have come out of the depression and they'll talk about, they'll share their stories of going through it and how those things significantly change the way they are going forward.
Right. So you
that they are fundamentally different people,
you know, like, well, my parents grew up in the depression. So that mean we kind of like had little hoards of food in our house and they were, you know, untrustworthy about where they were going to put their money. And like, it actually changed them, like an external thing changed them. Right.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And so it just feels like we're in this spot where we have this massive, like we are living in a very different world than we were 7 weeks ago.
And the question is like, will that change us or how will that, might that change us kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I guess I've been thinking through like Walter Brueggemann, kind of the Old Testament scholar, he will often talk about how there's kind of this three modes that he identifies through the Old Testament that I think are true of so much of life, that we go through modes of orientation where like life makes sense. We have answers. Those answers work for the questions we're asking. Life makes sense in the space of of orientation. Then we get thrown into disorientation where our answers no longer work the way they used to, where the world doesn't make sense the way it used to. And then on the backside, we enter into this reorientation where we maybe have new answers to new questions.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I'm not
convinced we're there yet.
Okay. So that, I guess that's my question. Like, how do we come out? I guess my question is, do you feel like something's being revealed in this space where life is, we're in a space of disorientation, right? Like we are not at a coffee shop. We are on Zoom from each other's home offices.
But yet we're still having the same conversation. Like that's sort of the analogy I've heard used is there's differences between a blizzard, between a winter season and an ice age, right? In a blizzard, you can't go outside. You are sheltered in your home. It's dangerous. It's unhealthy to be out. And so in a blizzard, like you're locked down, and typically blizzards don't last for 1,000 years.
Right. Oh, for sure.
And then winter is, I can engage it, but a little bit at a time. And I can't stay there forever. And like, I got to get bundled up to go outside, but I can still go outside and go about my life kind of thing. And that also lasts longer than a blizzard, but not forever either. It's a season. And then an ice age is like, it changes the landscape of the planet. Right.
Sure.
And I would say we have moved from a blizzard to a winter a little bit. I don't think we're in an ice age. So like, maybe we will, but I don't know when that will be. I don't know how long it takes for us to get to that point. It took the Israelites 40 years in the desert to get to that point, right? To undo generations of things. And this 6 weeks of for those of us who have been on sabbaticals for 12 weeks, like that started to change something. But even that was like pretty easy to go back to the way things were. I listened to a podcast, 99% Invisible. You ever listen to that
one? Oh, absolutely. So, Roman Mars, greatest name ever.
He talked about masks. And what he talked about was the difference in cultures. Like, dude, I was at the store last night and I'm like, I do not get the proliferance of people who wear a mask on their chin and like pull it off their face and like
have it
around their neck, right?
No.
But like, it's like 10% of the people who are wearing a mask out there have done that. I don't know what that is. I don't know why you would pull that off. But his point in the podcast was Americans don't have a culture of mask wearing, but Chinese do.
Yeah,
Where did that come from, right? And so they were talking to like people who know and like, well, it was 100 years ago. And it was a concerted effort by the state to like to make propaganda about mask wearing and to like enforce this. And so now it's like, if Jeremy is sick and has a cold, he's going to go to work, but he's going to wear a mask when he goes to work because it's how he takes care of other people around him and don't want to get him sick. If it's cold outside, people will wear masks because it keeps you warmer. And it's flu season, people will just, it's just so normalized in their culture. But that took decades, right, to normalize it.
Yeah, totally.
You know, one executive order for 3 weeks that says wear a mask is not going to change our culture to be mask wearers.
Sure.
So partly to answer your question of like, so how does our culture shift or how do we actually experience that kind of change? I think it takes a long time. It takes a long time of engaging in new practices. And we are not a people that like to do that. Either. So I don't know.
Yeah, totally. I guess so part of I guess what I've been wondering through is it's kind of relates to the have you ever read any Phyllis Tickle's work?
Mm-hmm.
So how like the whole idea of like 500 year shifts, right? That if you look back on history, pretty well every 500 years there's a significant shift in the way the world operates, in significantly in the way the church operates. If you go back, you know, 500 years ago to the Reformation, and you keep going back, it feels like every 500 years. And she would have argued we're on kind of one of those tipping points of one of those 500-year shifts.
Yeah.
Right? It's been 500 years. that probably the way we do church going forward, like in the future, is going to be different than the way we have in the past. Probably more significantly so for like right now than it was like 100 years ago, right? Like we're in the kind of that moment. And it's just made me wonder, like, is this one of those things that's going to ignite something? Maybe a change that's already been happening.
My perspective on that is like a 500-year shift doesn't happen because of 6 weeks we made a decision to wear masks in quarantine, right? Totally. Now, will it have an impact on how things can happen in the church? Like, of course, but I think it's one domino in a number of things. Dude, online church is not new.
Oh, right? Agreed. Totally.
You know, like we have not, especially us as Harbor Churches even, at this point, we have not innovated anything new in this season.
Sure.
It feels new to us because we weren't doing it before, but house churches, not a new thing, you know, but like you think about the long-term effects of these things and it might steer more towards this kind of movement instead of that kind of movement. I think about the fact that how churches change, like not just churches, but the way we think about church changed when the United States put in a highway system, right? Because prior to an interstate highway, you couldn't just go to a different community to go to church. You had a church in your community and your community was centered around that church.
Yeah,
that
totally
changed, right? That changed because now I've got options. I can go to Jeremy's community and go to church. I can go to somewhere else. Suddenly that birthed a little bit of consumerism, right?
Moved away from kind of the
mega churches became a thing, and that birthed a little bit more of consumerism. And then over a few decades, like suddenly we're living in a world where church is a consumer thing. Might this be the beginning or the continuation of a move away from that back towards a more missional thing? Certainly we've seen the emergent church movement in the 90s and early 2000s. And then also like more focus on the least of these and more missional church kind of practices happen. And I think this can follow in that line of dominoes, but I certainly wouldn't, like, I can't imagine pinpointing this moment of going, now here we go.
Right? Sure. Oh, sure.
Way
sure,
bigger
sure,
than
sure.
that.
No, I get that. I get that. I get that.
I can
that.
See how it can continue some of those trends. And I think it's a little arrogant of us to go, well, I can notice now that we're going to move in this direction because.
For sure.
Now we're doing this. I'm like, I don't know if that's true. Never underestimate people's ability to jump back to the thing that's the most comfortable. After a crisis. So I don't know, but the Great Depression, that changed people for sure. You know, like I'm still not sure how like the housing crisis in 2008, you know, like 10, 12 years ago has changed.
Yep.
I mean, it has, but I'm not sure I know how yet. So
sure. Yeah.
I would hope in 100 years she could write the book on how this season like moved our church around, but I don't know how to write it now.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. Totally get that.
I mean, what would be your, if we took that premise of we're in the middle of that right now, how do you think we should engage that then? Like, obviously, like I said, we can't write the book on it right now, but is there a way you think we should be engaging?
Oh man. In what might come?
Yeah. Like, is this a situation? I mean, you're not far then, I guess, from the kind of person that would say we're at the groanings of the pre-rapture here. So, you know, get your act together because Jesus is coming soon. You know, like that's not what you're saying, but if you're
totally,
the church is seismically shifting. What do we do about that right now if we're in it? You know,
sure, yeah, I don't know what this is, what this season is maybe revealing in that, if anything, but it does feel like it's a move away. My hope is it's a move away from kind of the consumer version of like, I go to a place to get a religious good and service and then I go home.
Oh dude. Right. Like that was a conversation we were having the other day as pastors, as preachers, like saying, oh, the thing that seems most important about our Sunday morning church service is the thing we miss the most, is the thing that people care about, is the like corporate experience that transcends an individual experience, and realizing maybe I'm not as integral to that as I once thought I was. Right?
Totally.
Like that's what I took away from that conversation of going, maybe it's not about the words I preach as much as like what God is doing while we're all together. Sure. Yeah, yeah, that feels like a shift, like at least in us right now.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. Yeah. This move towards the one another and it's why I love the way we use partnership language instead of member. Like my hope is it's a move towards a being a part of a missional movement of what God has always been doing in the world that now he's inviting us to partner with instead of going to a building to ask what.
So continuing a trend, but perhaps mm-hmm. waking more of us up to it and engaging more of us in it. Right. Like I can see that for sure.
It's one of my hopes because in some ways we keep although our format has changed, like we keep putting out a product on Sundays. Right. And I think what we're recognizing is what my hope is. One of the things we're recognizing is what we're missing isn't necessarily the product, but it's the, mm-hmm. that shared thing shared that we thing. Have yeah. together.
Yeah.
Where my life is bigger than just me. And yeah, there's something about gathering together with a community, with a group of people all around mm-hmm. a common purpose, a common goal.
So like from the consumer standpoint, there's this idea, and I think we have moved, I mean, my experience personally has moved away from this, what I saw 10, 20 years ago,
sure.
Where it was like, what's the thing that makes me feel the best and I want to consume that? Or
sure.
The thing I like the most and the thing that we're consuming feels more like a product. I like what that preacher says. I like how that music sounds. I like that program that's offered. Right. And interestingly, the thing you said, like reminds me that in the move from that has been more towards shared experience. What's the thing that I feel a part of, that I feel connected to, and I feel like I'm having a shared experience?
Sure.
And I think that has been, like, we've already seen that on the rise before any of this. Airbnb is exactly because of that. Like, we want this shared, unique experience.
Hmm.
It's like, I don't want just the best product, because frankly, going to an Airbnb isn't as good as a five-star hotel, right?
Sure, totally.
If I was consumer-based, I would take the five-star hotel.
Sure.
But like, what's this cool, interesting place in downtown Nashville, you know, like that is quirky and unique and like lives in this part of town, right?
Absolutely.
Like the millennial thirst for experience is way higher than their desire to consume. And so like they change jobs because of that. They vacation because of that. The Fire Festival, you know, takes place or doesn't take place because I'm paying tens of thousands of dollars for a shared experience.
Yeah, totally.
And now this might be like putting a magnifying glass on that for the church and saying, man, the thing that you're longing for is shared experience. Because suddenly our bar is a lot lower for the consumer thing we consume. Mm-hmm. We don't care if the music is as good or the video is as good or, you know, like we're okay with that now because what we want is the shared thing.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's good for the church.
I would agree.
I think that's good for me. I like that. Yeah.
That's the thing I look forward to going back to for sure.
Well, I think we've solved all the world's problems today then.
Yes.
Jeremy gave me a face like, well, what did you expect?
Yeah. I mean, isn't that what we do?
That is what we do. Well, hey man, thanks for thanks for coming on and
asking me a couple
of questions. It was good to hang out and chat with you.
Oh, you as well. Hey.